Paul and Prue Ensor farm at Glen Ann Station in the Canterbury High Country. When Cosmo popped in to visit them recently, their three children, Juliet, Guy and Hugh, took him to the kennels to show off the newest members of the farm team.
Who have you got there?
This is Ruff.
Now, has Ruff got some puppies?
Yeah, she's got three.
Let's have a look. They're like little sausages.
Yeah.
One's more of a tub.
So these will be sheepdogs?
Yeah. The mum's a beardy hunterway.
And what about the dad?
We're not too sure what breed the dad is.
How many dogs have you got on the farm here?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 work dogs, and then we have a Labrador and a Border Terrier.
Juliet, what's it like for you living here on this rather isolated high country station?
It's pretty fun. It's really cool, yeah.
What do you do in the weekends?
Help Dad and Mum, like, move sheep, do brake fences, help on the farm, and play with my brothers.
And what school do you go to?
I go to Mount Hunt College in Methven.
It must take quite a while for you to get to school every day.
Yeah, we get on the bus at 7:20, and it's like an hour and 15 minutes on the bus. Mm. Yeah.
Who's top dog here?
Tink.
Tink, yeah.
How come?
She's just very well behaved, usually, and hard working. And she's a hunterway, so she's black and like a tan colour with brown eyes, and she's short haired.
Paul, how long have you had Tink for?
Tink, we must have had her for probably 3 or 4 years. Had an older team, and she was the first of the new younger dogs that came through. So she's probably what most farmers would call their mainstay, their main dog. Mm. Does a lot of the work, and we're quite reliant on her at the moment. But I've got a young shepherd as well. He's got a team of dogs, and he does a lot of the management of the livestock, and he focuses on that and does a really great job. So we're very fortunate to retain him for 3 years, and he's very crucial to what we do here.
Because I do hear from some farmers that it's quite hard to find good staff nowadays.
Yeah, the retention of good staff is a challenge, and then finding them to start with is, yeah. We're seeing a new wave of young people coming through at the moment. We get a call during the week, you know, someone looking for a job. And it's hard to attract people out into these remote areas where there's not a pub just down the road and in a corner shop. So, yeah, it's been a challenge.
You'd have to be okay about being on your own a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, invariably here in this sort of area, you end up working a lot on your own. There are a number of younger people in the area who work on the farms, neighbouring farms, so it's good for them to keep in contact with each other and do things together. So we've got a wee community hub, which is a local fire station, which we meet sort of once a month. And we have a fire practice, and then we have a catch-up over a beer and a barbecue, so there's a bit of that happens as well.
How often have you had to put a fire out?
Not too often, maybe once or twice a year we get called out to various areas.
Okay, so we are going to head out onto the farm now.
So the property we can see in the distance on the trees is Glen Arif Station, which is where my father grew up. So in 1916, my great-grandfather, in conjunction with a couple of brother-in-laws, bought the three main runs up this valley. And he then, in 1921, he had three sons. So he had four sons. One stayed in the home place down near Ringura, and then he had three other boys came up and ran the three properties. And those three properties are now, what are they, five, six properties. They've been split up as generations come through, and five of them are still within our family, which is good to see.
So did you take over the farm that your parents were running?
Yes, so we came back from overseas in 2004 and took over the farm. We'd been away for a couple of years overseas, and I'd worked at Wellington for a meat exporting company for a couple of years, so it was really cool to come back and, I don't know, after working in an office for a few years, it's quite cool to come back and work outside and be your own boss yeah, it's a great place to have a family as well, so it's worked out really well for us.
Now we're driving down towards your farmyards, and beyond them we can see the mighty Rakaia River, and on the other side there's quite a well-known station, isn't there?
Yeah, so opposite us, which is directly north, is Mount Algida Station. Probably best known for when Mona Anderson wrote a book about it, A River Rules My Life, telling her story about living on quite an isolated high country farm. They have to cross the Wilberforce River to get access to the property, so that's cut off quite regularly.
Hmm. So where are we heading to now?
So we've got three distinct land types. There's the hill country, and then we've got some nice alluvial fans around the homestead. And now we're heading down onto the river flat, which has sort of got more recent soils, and got a large area of lucerne-based pastures, which we just having their final, the sheep are having their final grazing rotation on before they come back to the homestead area for their full winter feeding program.
We are heading into a paddock. All handy having the kids in the car to do the gates.
Yeah, it's great to have a gate opener. Makes life a lot easier. And they're getting more and more handy by the day, so that's good.
We're going to join that one to the other gate, too.
There's always a bit of fear with gate opening about electric shocks, so every now and then I have to deal with them still.
Now, in this paddock, there's quite a large mob of sheep.
These are wether lambs, so they were born back in September, October last year. So they're merinos. We run quite a fine merino flock. They're probably 15, 16 microns, which is sort of the diameter of the wool. And that can go into anything like woven suiting to your icebreakers, which is probably what everyone associates merino with. So yeah, these are just young animals, and we're just making sure we look after them well at this time of year because it's getting colder. So they're on a new bit of grass every day or two, and they're also getting some silage.
How many are in the mob here?
In this mob, I think this is just under 1,300, so yeah. We're just going to take them out of this paddock, throw another one to the next paddock, which they'll last them a day or two.
Just hop out and get the dog in the way.
Your dog knows exactly what to do.
Yeah, she's much smarter than me sometimes, so it always makes life easier.
Is that Tink?
Yeah, that's Tink out there, giving them a bit of a hurry up. And there's one over here that's still asleep, so we might have to go and wake it up.
There we are, the slightly startled wether is running back to the mob, chased by Tink.
So I grew up here. We had a little school down the road, and I think when I left there was only five of us there, so that closed not long after we left, but the school roll peaked at 14.
So a tiny school. What was that like?
Oh, it was cool. We had a great time, and it was a pretty unique place to grow up. And I think of the seven who were on the roll, two who lived across another river only came a couple of days a week. And then, so of the five, I think four of us were related. So, yeah, it's a pretty unique sort of environment to grow up in.
Who was your teacher?
Mr. Baker, and he was a real character. He had a pipe and he'd smoke that, you know, all day. And it was good fun. We had a lot of fun playing in the creek next to the school and all that sort of stuff. It was good times.
Paul, can you tell me what we can see around us?
So as we look sort of due west, I guess, we're looking up into the main divide of the Rakaia, so the headwaters of the Rakaia. And in the middle of the valley here, we've got Double Hill, which is a Rushmutone, which is a glacial formation. So when the glacier came out of the Rakaia and the Matthias rivers up in the headwaters, it was a bit of hard rock on the valley floor, which the glaciers went over the top of, and where they converged, it kind of scoured out a wee sort of saddle in the middle of the hard bit of rock, so it looks like a double hump, if you like, of a camel. So that sits in the middle of the valley floor. And then I guess we're just sort of surrounded by mountains to the south and the north, and Arthur's Pass is directly north of us. I'm not sure how far, it might be 30 kilometres away. And actually where we sit in the valley here at the moment, it's actually to the west coast, it's the same equidistance to the west and the east coast, so we're pretty much right in the centre of the South Island.
Mm. And there is snow on all the mountains around us?
Yeah, the snow's sitting probably at its sort of typical level for the winter, which is probably down to about 1,000 metres in altitude. In the old days, they used to call the snow line our boundary, so in the winter, before the winter, they'd bring all the stock down to a certain level, and then once the snow layer set itself in, then they'd just let the stock go back up again, and they wouldn't go up into the snow, so they called it, basically the snow created a boundary fence for the winter.
And there is a walkway that passes through your farm.
Yeah, so we've got the Te Aroa Trail, which goes through our property, so that's the national walkway that runs the length of New Zealand. So we have people, well, pre-COVID, there was a lot of international people walking through the property. That's sort of something that a lot of people come out to New Zealand to do, and not so many Kiwis, but we've seen more Kiwis in the last couple of years coming through. So it runs, probably 3 or 4 Ks. It walks through the middle of our property, follows a creek out and into the Ashburton Conservation Park, Hecateri Conservation Park. And we're actually at a trailhead, so people can't cross. They're advised not to walk across the Rakaia River for obvious reasons, for safety. So they actually stop, it's a real start and stop point, so people go back to Meffin to resupply and then start from the other side of the river.
Mm. So do you have a number of stiles that they can climb over? Or?
Yeah, so there's obviously a few fences that the walkway crosses, so there's the stiles and there's also horse gates there. And we have a wee Airbnb cottage on the farm too, so people can stay there and do parts of the trail if they choose as well.
How far is the first hut from here?
It's probably a 3-hour walk from here, and then there's another one probably a couple hours after that, so people stay in different huts, and some people even camp along the trail as well.
Hello, Tink. Get up here. Get up here. Olga, get up here. Olga.
What are your main revenue streams here?
A lot of our income comes from our merino wool. We share that through August, September, and that merino wool would probably make up well over half of our annual income. So we've got to be very careful about how we manage the sheep through this period, particularly now leading up to shearing, to make sure we keep the quality in the wool and keep them well fed so they produce a really good fleece of wool, which processes well and is made into really good quality garments.
Mm. How much wool will they grow a year?
So a young animal like that will get about three kilos off them, and the ewes closer to 5 kilos. You might get three tops out of 1 kilo, so, they're clothing quite a few people per year per sheep.
Mm. So feeding can really impact on the quality of the wool.
Yeah, absolutely. If they didn't get very well fed for even a week, the micron would narrow up and the wool would get a break in it, so it wouldn't be as strong. So then people buying it to process it would break in the yarn, and then they'd have all sorts of trouble knitting it into fabrics that they wanted to.
Could you get the micron even lower here, or have you reached the finest wool possible that you can do?
We're actually not really trying to go any finer. In fact, we're possibly going slightly stronger at the moment. We're trying to have an animal which is more dual purpose, so it produces plenty of lambs and grows good wool. So at the moment we're sort of transitioning to what's called a pole merino, so a merino that's sort of higher fertility, has more lambs that grow faster. So we're sort of, to complement our wool business, we're trying to make sure we've got a good diverse product range.
Yes. Gosh, the mob have moved a long way down towards the river there.
Yeah, I think they found another gate and they've headed into the next paddock, which I didn't know was open, so we'll have to go and bring them back to where they're supposed to be.
So what sort of cattle do you run here?
We've got an Angus beef herd. This is our main cattle. We trade a few cattle through various times of year, depending on the feed supply as well.
So do they follow behind the sheep and clean up?
Yeah, they do, yep. And we've got other areas where the cattle do a better job. So the... Ooh, crikey, it's a bit rough here. They graze parts of the hill that the sheep don't really go into. The merinos like to climb up and the cattle would like to stay at the bottom, so they're quite complementary.
Paul, we have come up to a high point on your farm and we're standing beside a trig station. Tell me about this.
Well, it's not something I know a lot about, but I believe from each trig station you can see 2 or 3 other points. So when they originally mapped a lot of New Zealand, they sort of used it to triangulate to make the maps. So it's a fixed point, obviously, they surveyed from. They knew the altitude and everything from that.
So how long do your merinos stay on this higher hill country?
It always depends on the type of season we've had. So there's actually a mob of ewes you can see up here, sort of higher up. They're sort of at maybe 700-800 metres there, and they're due to come down this next week, and we'll start feeding them in their winter feeding regime.
You must love going up and doing the mustering.
Yeah, it's always great to get up the hill there, and it's nice and quiet and away from any distractions, and out there with the dogs, it's always a good day out and good fresh bit of air to clear the mind away.
Do you guys go and do some mustering too?
Yeah.
Yep.
We leave in the morning, 8 a.m, and then we go up the hill, get the sheep, and then bring them back down to wherever they're going, to the yards or another paddock.
Do you have to walk?
Yeah, walk and get them with the dogs.
Quite steep hills. You must be exhausted when you get home.
Yeah, but sometimes we can drive up because we've got a zigzag track at the bottom there.
Now, as well as being a high country farmer, you are also involved in a startup called Hemprino.
Yeah, look, I did a rural leadership course about 4 years ago, and a friend I made on that course, Siobhan O'Malley, she came to me one day and she said, do you know of anyone who blends merino and hemp fibre together? And at that stage, I hadn't heard of anyone, so I did a bit of research, and she said, why don't we join forces and see if we can't bring a product to market that combines merino and hemp fibre in a unique way. So we've been working on that for 3.5 years now, and we've finally just brought something together which we're able to start selling to consumers. Yes.
And you're making clothing?
Yes, so we're making, at this stage, we initially just started with a crew jersey, just one product and one colour, but now we're rapidly broadening our range, so we now sell a hoodie, a v-neck, a woolly hat and a scarf, all made of this blend of hemp and merino.
And how would you describe the fabric?
The fabric's amazing, so it's got a really soft, luscious, luxurious feel, and it's quite unique in its appearance that the hemp doesn't take up dye like the merino does, so it's kind of got this what they call a melange look or a fleck through it. And it looks really cool, and it's got an amazing soft feel. So yeah, we were really happy with it and excited to share it with consumers.
What were some of the challenges early on when you were trying to blend the two different fibres?
I guess one of our bigger challenges has been finding the right quality hemp that would blend well with the merino. So we actually did a study trip to China to try and work with a mill over there that could help us blend the two. The challenge is matching the length of hemp fibre with the merino and the right quality. So we're now in our third iteration of yarn to help develop something that's really knittable and gives a really nice user-friendly soft feel.
So do you have to source the hemp from China?
At this stage we are, yeah. There's hemp fibre grown in New Zealand, but it's processed not to the right quality which we require at the moment. So we're working very closely with New Zealand Natural Fibres, which is a subsidiary of Carfields, who have been developing the hemp fibre industry in New Zealand. So we hope as soon as product becomes available in New Zealand, that's something we'll grab and start using along with our New Zealand wool.
And do you use the wool from this property here?
So initially we didn't actually know what type of quality of merino we wanted, so we haven't used our own wool because we've been all about trying to get a product up and running. So it's certainly our intent, but we've probably used 3 different types of merino wool to date. So we've always been about getting the product right, and then we'll start using our own farm story as part of the product.
And how important was it for you to make that big trip to China just to really refine what you were doing?
It was a really interesting time for us to go over there and just see how big the industry is and learn a lot about how it was produced over there and made. But then COVID hit, so we actually brought all our manufacturing back into New Zealand. So we're solely made in New Zealand now. So our yarn's made up in Wellington, and our tops are knitted up in Auckland. So it's a little bit more expensive to produce, but we get a really great quality product, and we've got some really good partners that we work with. So we're very proud to do that.
So how do you sell your clothing?
Yes, so at the moment we're web-based, so we have a website, hemprino.co.nz. We're available in one store in Methven, which, being a ski town, so hopefully we'll get a few people through to have a look at it. But we have some pretty big aspirations. We want to grow a really big business that we can, you know, with farm succession, not all family members can get involved in farming. So as we're 3 families involved in the business, if we can grow a business that can enable our children to get involved in different aspects of it, that would be a really great success for us, I think.
Paul Ensor there, who farms at Glen Ann Station in the Rakaia Gorge and co-owns the Hemprino clothing brand.